It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Good morning. Another great week here in Phoenix, Arizona. We are making sure that you have every opportunity to get the truth. And you also get to have a say, you know, when I feel like you should. We have fun making sure that you get the information. And to get the information, we do go through a lot of work to plan out what we want to share. And then, you know, if you have a comment on what we're talking about, well, then you just call on in. 800-313-9443, and you're welcome. Now, the thing is that today we're getting up towards 9-11. You know, we're going into year eight. I don't spend a whole lot of time on it because, you know, I already know, and I know you know. And this is what I know. Government, la, 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 la. So whatever came out of them in the beginning, you know, we already knew, yeah, this is going to be spun like you wouldn't believe into getting all that police state stuff they had sitting on the shelves and make sure they could pass it. Because what we knew in 2001, we did our first Freedom Summit 3 weeks after 9-11. We already had it planned and so on. A few weeks before 9-11, we went up to another conference called Era Society in Aspen, Colorado, Mark Victor and I, and my partner in the Freedom Summit, freedomsummit.com. You'll see great speakers we have this December. First weekend in December 09 is the next summit. What happened was we heard Dr. Paul speak, and he said, you know, what was coming. I mean, he was very clear how out of control the government, and we'd known this, but he was very adamant and detailed about it was inevitable, the crash. It was unsustainable what was happening on a philosophical basis and math. It's all about math. So I remember we asked him, Mark and I, we got asked questions, and first thing I wanted to know, I'm going, you know, we're libertarians. We've seen this. We understand. We know. Now what? I mean, you're in the halls of Congress here. What should we be doing to be prepared for this? And he goes, buy a gun. Real simple. Matter of fact, buy a gun. You're going to need it. Okay. You know, I like this guy. 3 weeks later, 9-11 happened. 3 weeks after that, we had our first Freedom Summit. Now, the summit, we're thinking, wow, people were canceling, you know, they weren't able to fly, all kinds of problems are going on in transportation and such. And we're going, should we cancel it? We might lose money. And we go, nah, we need to do this because it's going to get worse. It's going to get a lot worse. So what happened was we went ahead and had the summit, and it was very telling the perspective that people had on what was going to happen. And they were accurate. It was the Freedom Summit is an annual update of where we are. Well, now we're already there. So now what? You know, the greatest depression is nigh. And what do we do now? So this year we're going to have a little bit more preparation because a lot of the guys, you know, the gazillionaire libertarian types that, you know what's going to happen, make a lot of money when the market crashes. You know, like they write books like Crash Proof. You know, making a whole bunch of money when everything goes to crap, you know. And when they do, there's a reason. Because they know. Do you know? You think you know. You don't know. So you go to Freedom Summit, you'll know. Well, today we have a gentleman that knows. And he's going to share with us. He's focused on the 9-11 thing, but from a very different angle. He just wants you to know what the bad guys know or demonstrate that they know. You'll be very interested in this. You stay tuned. Michael Schoen will be with us in studio here in just a little bit. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence.
There are those that just want to be left alone. and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
To declare your independence, of me, Ernest Hancock, and in studio, Michael Schoen, and a longtime friend. Now, Mike and I have got to know each other over the years, and yes, several claims to fame. But the main thing is that we want to focus on is there is a truth out there, and some people seek it, some people demand it, some people are, you know, just can I ask a question? And once you get past that part, you know, good luck getting an answer. But, you know, a lot of times you're not even allowed to ask. Now, Michael, I'll tell you one of the things his claim to fame here in the Valley. He's well known here in Arizona because Michael Schoen is one of the sons of the founder of U-Haul. What was your father's name?
L.S. Schoen or Leonard Samuel Schoen.
So Leonard, you know, started U-Haul. So, you know, you got a couple of, you know, extra bucks laying around. So you're not starving or anything. Except, last year probably nailed you a little bit, didn't it? Now, you know, the thing is that Michael has devoted his life, his, retirement years into, you know, let's just advocate truth and have peace of mind and go out and, you know, be a good guy. You know, I vote being a good guy. So he has. In fact, he ran for Congress as a Libertarian candidate for U.S. Representative, and he made the focus of his campaign the truth about 9/11. And there's a lot of the things that he's done to keep himself entertained and busy and, you know, fighting the freedom fight. But this one, he was kind of a new convert. And now he's turned his website into, the name of it now is Complete and Total Bull, and it spells it out.com. And the thing is that I'm going, I was surprised that that domain was even available, to be honest. But the thing is I want Michael to introduce himself and then kind of give you a chronology of his awakening to, you know, because he was not always this way. You know, he was far more, you know, endorsement of the system, you know, America. You know, America. America, military might is right. We go and claim bad guys coming to America. We have, you know, the strongest infrastructure. We go and kick America. You know, America. Wave flag, wave America. Okay? You know, I'm telling you, you know, I know this mentality. You know, America, right? You know, always right country, go to America. You know, and they'll get up and run for office, America. Red, right. White, and blue flag, wave around America. You know, I'm going, you know, wow, you know, they're so, and that was you a little bit, you know, and then kind of, you know, it started to change. When did that change start? We'll get into your program here because it's a very interesting thing. He wrote a check for $15,000, gave it to the Arizona editorial board and said, here, this money's yours if, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But building up to that, I want to know your evolution from just out there in the masses and all of a sudden you become a freedom activist. What up with that?
Okay, well, let me get back to my dad and U-Haul. The reason that's important is that my father was a person who lived the American dream in a good way, in a real way, and was economically creative. And through hard work and a lot of hard work and intelligence and working together with a lot of people, actually created something. So I was privileged to work with him during the good times and the bad times. And it was a great honor. I learned a lot about the basic laws of economics, which are being demonstrated today. But what happened with me in terms of a conversion was that I spent most of my adult life working as an attorney, and most of that was doing litigation. And long story short, you learn to spot people who lie real quick. As an attorney doing litigation, that's part of the things you got to do. And you actually, I developed the ability to actually identify liars real quickly in a matter of seconds because you had to. And so I was a regular, I was very great interest in history, but, and I voted for George W. Bush the first time, and I really didn't care, and I voted for him because I thought his wife was nicer than the other guy's wife. And I used to work out at an athletic club, and they had all these three TVs on, and one of them was devoted to so-called politics or public issues, and always had George Bush's guys on. Well, I never listened to them. I knew that they're just going to spout out a bunch of, there probably wasn't going to be that anything important, but as I watched him, I would peg each one of them as a liar without even having heard them because of their body language and what they did. And that's what really got me interested in, because I started, you know, I don't watch much TV, and I could see these people were liars, and I could identify what type of a liar they were. And that got me going, really.
So you're sitting here. This is after 2000. You have a new president. All of a sudden, you're at the gym. You're seeing the TVs on all the time. And every time you see the Bush administration representatives up there, you're going, wow, man, I don't even know what they're saying, but they look like liars to me.
No, it's not they look like. I knew they're heavy-duty liars, and I knew exactly what kind of liars they were because I dealt with witnesses and opponents like that. There's no question.
So you have enough experience, you just see it.
You know it, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So now you have this information. These guys are lying. Then what do? You turn up the volume and find out what they're lying about?
I had a buddy who was an investigative reporter, and he knew a lot of the stuff that Ernie talks about, and he had actually been participated in this stuff, and he died. He got in an accident.
Oh, Brian.
Brian.
Let me tell you this story real quick. Brian Quigg was an investigative reporter. There was a small local newspaper that was handed out by the homeless here. It was called The Grapevine. They'd print up a bunch. The homeless would purchase them and sell them on the street corner, make money. This was a growing enterprise. They did really well in the city because it was critical of the government. They were like, oh, no, you're not. So that got regulated out. But during the meantime, there was they called it the Temple Murder Case, and it was Buddhist monks out in the West Valley had a temple that there was somebody went in with a machine gun and massacred them, and our guns, whatever, they're all dead. So it was like nine of them or something like that. There was a lot, and he traced it back to where it was part of the heroin drug war that a lot of elected officials here were part of. And, you know, it's a CIA thing. It went and this is before the internet. You know, keep in mind, you know, this is a lot of. So the internet started. He took all this accumulated information and he worked very hard to get it up on the web. Well, all of a sudden now all this information is available to everybody. I didn't like that none too much. And he was very reluctant to come on my radio show back in 2003 when we started doing radio. And he was like, nah, I don't think I could survive it. You know, I'm not. And then you came out to Arizona Breakfast Club and talked about a lot of this stuff. And we did a radio show, and he was inspired because you guys were friends. He goes, oh, if Michael can do it and he's not dead yet, I'll go ahead and come on. This was a Sunday. He called me. He was supposed to be on that Monday. He didn't show up. I get a call from your secretary saying he'd been killed the night before.
Yeah.
And I'm going, whoa. So you can look up Brian Quigg in my archive and you'll see there, you know, interesting stuff. So what happened was, Brian, they said what happened, you know, at 1-2 in the morning, he was walking across the street in Southwest Phoenix and he got run over, you know, and we're going, okay. So, but what he had done is he did a lot of video. He knew what was going on. He wanted it on tape. You got to keep in mind, this is back in VHS days. Okay. This is not, you don't got DVDs, you don't have digital, you don't have YouTube, you don't have it. He goes and gets an expensive camera or a cheap one or whatever, and he goes and he interviews these generals and former elected officials and bureaucrats and so on that were inside this stuff of what was going on, has it documented. So this documentation you wound up with.
Right. Well, see, Brian and I, we both had a common interest in the assassination of John Kennedy. So we had talked about that freely and openly down to the last detail. And we're trying to get and figure that out. Well, and then Brian would say, well, let me tell you about more. And he'd start to talk about things like the Bush crime family. And I'd say, shut up, Brian. I'm not going to listen to that. I got enough problems in my life. Or let me tell you about what's going on today. I said, I don't want to know, Brian. And so what happened was, so we had both were working on the origin and the accomplishments or lack thereof of the national security state, which was really the thing that took out John Kennedy. But I really wouldn't talk about what was going on today with Brian because I didn't want the stress. And so when Brian died, his mother called me and says, you're his best friend. Here's all his junk. You can have it. And so I had all these videos, all these tape recordings and all these books and notes. And I figured before I throw them in the 50-gallon garbage cans, I should go through them, and books too. And so I started to go through them. And that's where I got one heck of an education, right down with the original witnesses, because Brian, he had run a speakers bureau. And he had these guys who are well known. He had all sorts of people whose names you'd recognize and who are famous people and who were had a position in the national security state, who turned on it and said, here's what's really going on. And so I looked at all those, and it got scarier and scarier. And I went through all the videos, and then I got to his literally many, 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 many hundreds of little cassette recordings. I went to the first one. And I was already, it took me months to get that far. And then when I got to the first audio recording, I turned that on, and here he was interviewing a guy I knew, an attorney who held a place. He was a part of the state government of Arizona at the time and is a well-known attorney. And I said, no, I'm not going to listen to any more of these. And I put the audio tapes away, never listened to them. And he also had interviewed the former head on that same audio tape of the DEA, International Drug Enforcement. I mean, this is all real stuff. So Brian had, he really got me going. And I've been a history addict, a book addict since 1970, I think. And, I mean, you can't believe this stuff. All real history, no summaries, you know. So.
Yeah, you know, so it's amazing what Brian, he understood already what was going on. And he had, you know, a lot of other interests that he worked in. But I'm telling you, he was convinced of what was going on because he went to the sources, got the information, and he woke up dead one day. Right before, hours before he was supposed to be on this show. Well, you get a good show coming. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock. You get your balls to the wall, man. Balls to the wall.
You get your balls to the wall, man. Yeah, welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on the RBN Network. Central Standard Time, from Freedoms, with an S, freedomsphoenix.com studios here in Phoenix, Arizona. In studio with me is Michael Schoen. Now, Michael Schoen has, several claims to fame, but he's walking the path trying to find the truth, and sometimes you just get it slapped upside your head, and you got to deal with it. And there was a friend of both of ours back, into the 80s, that he's active here. And I met him in early 90s, and he was deep. He was behind the veil and interviewed a lot of names, NSA, General Admiral kind of guys. I mean, it was just, people that are in the history, and he got it raw. Has it all on audio cassettes and VHS and documents that he meticulously kept and ordered, and then he's dead. Well, all that just kind of, went into the storage warehouse of Mr. Michael Schoen. And, we may do a project. We may be able to, at least, even if we don't annotate every single thing, we just get the raw MP3s and the footage and everything. That's what the internet's for. Boom, there it is. Y'all figure it out. Have a nice day. And add it to the wealth of information, because I'm telling you, this is really damaging stuff to this apparatus. But what happened was, is you got to think, when he was doing this, people believe the government would never do anything like that. They're good. And you were one of those guys.
Right. And they also thought Brian was a loser, which he was, because he was a brilliant guy. I mean, smart. And I mean, academically smart. But he wasn't making a whole ton of money because he's working on this all the time. And here was this brilliant guy who was living a very, a life right on the minimal edge. But he was a great, great guy. He was a true altruist. He wanted to help people. He was a beautiful guy.
Yeah, no, Brian was a good guy. He was definitely smart, and he was committed, because he knew that this information no one else was doing. And that's what drives a lot of us. I'll tell you this. It's kind of this Spider-Man syndrome, It's because nobody else will.
Yeah.
With great knowledge and power and ability comes great responsibility, and some people take that seriously because they know nobody else is doing it.
Brian was real smart. He took organic chemistry in college, got an A, and thought it was fun. I've never met a guy like that. That doesn't happen very often. But anyway, what happened was that Brian and I basically dealt with what I call the national security state. Nobody's particularly interested in, and it's really the center of if it's not the center, it's as close a center as I know of the problems we've got in this country. And so over these years, and sometimes with Ernie's help, I've tried to communicate to people about the national security state with not a lot of success. I've had a radio show. I did bumper stickers. I wrote articles. I talked here and there, whatever. And I ran for Congress. But I stumbled across really what is the Achilles heel of the national security state. This will take him down totally and completely. And that is 9/11. And it's really obvious. And I stumbled across that because of Ernie, also because I was just sort of starting this campaign for Congress. Ernie says, well, you got to go to this convention of these people who are 9/11 truthers. And I thought, yeah, that sounds like a bunch of wackos, and it sounds like a bunch of stupid people. But if Ernie says I should go there and, you know, and have a table and talk to people about the national security state, I'll do it. Because Ernie, you know, I trust Ernie. So I went there. And there they were. It was a bunch of these 9/11 truthers. It was over 2 years ago. I don't can't remember when it was. And so they were handing out DVDs. And I was embarrassed even to be close to these people.
It was the spring of 07, I remember. And it was right when the revolution, Ron Paul thing started.
And I would not go into any of the rooms where they're showing the DVDs, nor would I go over to any of the booths and talk to the 9/11 truthers, because I did not want to be associated with them, because I presumed they were whack jobs. Okay? And some of them came around and gave me DVDs. So I figured, okay, I can't see a garbage can. So I put these couple, three DVDs on the floor under my booth. But when they started taking the place down, they took away the covering on my little table. And you could see these DVDs on the floor. And I was embarrassed. I thought, well, I don't want people to think I'm rejecting their stupid ideas. So I picked up the DVDs. I took them home. And I sat there for like a year. Okay. Because I was going to use them, maybe see if I could copy over the DVD disc. Okay? I didn't give these people any credit.
Well, what prompted you to actually start watching the DVD?
Well, I do my exercise, you know, and I turn on the TV, put in a sort of a funny DVD or something, you know, that was entertaining. I'd watch it. And so Noreen Rink, who Ernie knows, is she and her husband are activists. She gave me, she's really smart, and she gave me a DVD on 9/11. And I looked at it, and I thought, wow, there's a glimmer of evidence in there. See, and I approach everything as an attorney, disciplined by the evidentiary process. I don't approach it as somebody who's looking for what's sensational or what could be true or to gossip about something. I know you got to prove something. You got to do it through evidence, and it has to be evidence that's real evidence that you can back up. And it has to, in this instance, has to meet a pretty high standard of proof. I mean, we're talking beyond preponderance of the evidence. We're talking about beyond a reasonable doubt, because we're talking about a crime. And in those DVDs, which I would watch over and over and over and over again, I found there was evidence that could not be denied.
And when we come back, we're going to talk about the evidence that would change a hard skeptic. You know, and then what did he do? If you got some means, you might do something. What did he do? It's very interesting. We'll talk about more when we come back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Declare Your Independence. I'm me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Central Standard Time on the RBN Network from freedomsphoenix.com studios here in Phoenix, Arizona. In studio, Michael Schoen. Now, Michael Schoen is telling us a story of, you know, how he became awakened. You know, and I've known Michael a long time. He's a good-hearted soul kind of guy, focuses on one thing at a time. You know, don't distract me. I got a life to lead, and I can have a little bit of luxury in there. He's got a beautiful wife. He's got a beautiful family. He's got, you know, a lot of things keep him distracted, and lives in a nice, large home in Paradise Valley. I mean, the boy's styling, okay? So why would he be distracted with all this truth stuff? Because something happened. You know, it kind of, it's not like you didn't have enough opportunities, you know. So finally, Noreen, a good friend of ours that also lives not too far from you, very, very hardcore, good libertarian, narco-capitalist, kind of don't have a whole lot of need for government, okay? So she's been dragging you along for a long time, her and her husband, Dick. And what happened was she finally got you to watch one of the 9/11 videos, and that kind of, you started to see something there, and then what happened?
Well, it was hard. It was a little hard to believe or emotional at first, because if this stuff is true, then we got a lot of bad things happening. And so I couldn't accept it at first. So I thought, well, maybe it's not true. And if I read another book or look at another DVD on the same subject, I'll find out that it's not true. Then I kept finding out evidence that confirmed it and confirmed it and confirmed it, and excellent evidence. And so then I thought, it was quite an emotional thing to see that there's so much of these things are lying, and so much murder has gone on, and so much lying is going on. I was already a student of the national security state, but I knew that there were a lot of bad guys in the CIA and the intelligence organizations and at the top. But anyway, after I had looked at enough different sources and evidence and looked at it enough times, that I knew that the three World Trade Center towers had collapsed, not as a result of an aircraft impact and resultant fire, which of course did happen, but rather collapsed as a result of explosive demolition. And there's more, but I knew that at that time. And so the first thing I thought was, wow, this is the scary, horrible, amazing thing. I've got to tell people, important people. So I went to important, you know, tough people who I had worked with in the past who were attorneys and that I knew were, you know, made of sterling silver and tough people. And I told them, and they simply could not digest it. I mean, the reactions were, let's talk about something else. We're finished with that subject. Another reaction from a guy was, I met him for coffee before work, and I said, I got to talk to you about something very important. And this guy's known me for a long time. And I said, you know, this thing happened with 9/11. I know there's proof beyond a reasonable doubt that the towers came down through explosive demolition. And his response was, does that mean that you're asking me to support your campaign for Congress? Because I can't, because I'm supporting someone else. It's like everything is going over the heads of people. They can't deal with it. I had another breakfast meeting with the guy whose name I won't mention, but if he is the number one chief public Bush hater in Maricopa County, okay? There was no one who I knew of or heard of that hated George Bush more and was more vocal and more articulate and more intelligent in Maricopa County than this gentleman. I told him he didn't even have a sentence to respond to it, because people cannot conceive or digest this or handle this.
Well, there's... once you go up against that kind of opposition, and there's a lot of people that do, you know, they have the same kind of access to the same information, have the same kind of reaction, they want to share with other people. And the younger generation, it's not as difficult for them, because they're like, yeah, okay, cool, you know, we'll sit here and drink beer, smoke a doobie, and eat popcorn, and watch these DVDs, you know, in their dorm room or something. So they're like, oh, okay, yeah, plausible to me, you know, cool, and it goes on from there. But when you're dealing with another generation that is grew up on the three networks, you know, they're indoctrinated. Now they're invested in a system that they've been supported and benefited from, as you have for many decades. When you go to them and you say, you know, everything that you've been told has been a lie. Everything for a long time has been a lie. You know, heck, since your whole life, JFK, after the Eisenhower administration, World War II. I mean, you're a student of history. Your radio show used to be, you know, a lot of this stuff. And to think that this one, this one wouldn't be a lie because I was there when this one happened, and I believe it was on TV. I mean, you know, so the thing is that once you go through this process and you come up against, in your generation, a much more resistant group of people and friends, that frustrated you. And you wanted to have some kind of impact. So you were willing to do different things. One, make it part of your campaign running for office. I saw your website change. You started to focus more on different things, and you made and of course you got some attention. I mean, you know, here's an heir of the Schoen legacy, and we're of U-Haul and so on. So we'll throw the guy, you know, a couple extra paragraphs. But they avoided this issue as much as they could, no matter where you went or what you said. The press didn't want to play. So you came up with an idea that you thought would be, you know, interesting to a lot of people, and tell us about that idea.
Okay, the idea was to people, because no one would consider this the concept that the towers went down through explosive demolition, and you know, when I talked about it, I was on a forum. Well, here's the way it happened. I was on a forum with a guy who was running for a statewide public office. And I mentioned, didn't spend a lot of time, but I mentioned that the towers came down through explosive demolition. So this guy got up to speak after me, and he was affronted, and he said, you know, I usually don't say anything about other candidates that are running for other office, but this is sort of like an affront to America, you know, and this
America.
This is a bad guy.
America good.
This is
Team
a bad
America.
Guy.
Heck yeah.
And this guy was an accomplished attorney who had held positions of responsibility. So what I did is I thought about it for a couple of days, and I wrote him a letter. I said, I understand. I said, you have the same reaction I did when I first was presented with this possibility that the towers were destroyed through explosive demolition. I said, I sent him three DVDs in the mail, and I said, look, and I sent him a check for $1,000 written to him. And I said, look, all you have to do is look at these three DVDs, and then and I sent him a little pre-printed affidavit, and I said, and sign this affidavit saying after you look at the DVDs, if you look at the DVDs and sign this affidavit, and the affidavit was that I've looked at three DVDs and I've concluded that the towers came down as a result of aircraft impact and resultant fires and did not come down as a result of explosive demolition. So I was willing to pay this guy to disagree with me, but I was and pay him to confirm his existing opinion, but he could only do it after he looked at the evidence.
What did he do?
He sent me the check back, and he kept the DVDs and says, maybe someday I'll look at the DVDs. He was still scared to do it.
So that kind of, you hit on something. You're going, you know, what can I do with a little bit of money here, you know? And so then you came up with another phase.
Yeah, the next phase was on my website, which is now, it used to be shownforcongress.com, and now it's complete and total B-U-L-L-S-H blank blank, right? I guess I can't say that, .com. But anyway, what I did is on that, my campaign was still going on. So at that point, I offered a $100 and $1,000 similar prizes to any resident of Arizona who had a license to do a particular job who worked in Arizona. I wanted to get real people. I didn't want crackpots who were ideologues who hated my idea to come up.
So
and
like what? Like architects, engineers?
Architects, engineers, firemen, police officers, dentists, you know, all sorts of people who had. And I said, if you guys will look at these three DVDs and then sign this affidavit saying that you've looked at the three DVDs and you don't agree with me, you believe that the towers came down as a result of aircraft impact and resultant fires, and did not come down as a result of explosive demolition, then you can have the money. And I publicized that pretty heavily. I spent, a fair amount of time and money publicizing that, and nobody claimed the prize. And I had a couple guys. I had one guy who was a very successful Phoenix attorney. He was a very competent guy. He looked at the DVDs, and he said, your money's safe. He was a product liability guy. And then I had, so that was, so I went through that phase and I couldn't get any action out of that. So then I directed my attention at Arizona State University, and I spent, I guess it was about $5,000, which bought me 2 full-page ads in the Arizona State University paper, and it also bought me, I think, 8, what do you call it, display ads. And I advertised, I challenged any class at Arizona State University to look at these 3 DVDs, and then for all people in the class to sign this affidavit saying that they looked at the DVDs and they concluded that the towers collapsed as a result of aircraft impact and resultant fires and did not collapse as a result of explosive demolition, and I'd pay them $10,000. And I actually handed out handbills, you know, and I presented 2 8-hour symposiums at ASU trying to get people to do this, and no one would do it.
Why? Well, you know, it's amazing to me. This is, I mean, it was, this is built up into a very interesting project that I think is very telling to a lot of people, and certainly to yourself. I have some money. I have substantial, adequate amounts of money. I'm willing to spend $15,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, whatever. You know, I get what I want here. You know, it's worth it to me to have someone that will sign this affidavit saying, yes, I believe that the towers went down the way they said it did after I watched these DVDs, whatever 3 or 4 you had. And they go, I looked at this, and I'm willing to say, nah, it's all crap. This is what happened. Sign my name. Put it out. Give me my money. You would think that, you know, there would be some, even if they were just scum and just wanted the money and didn't care either way, you'd think you'd get some, but they know what would happen. You know, there would be a focus of attention on the person that did that if they really believed it, if they really wanted, but they're cowards on both sides. They're not willing to do it, you know, and take and forever be supporter of the official position of the government and get the money. You know, it's not worth it to them. They know what kind of attention they get. And even if they know that you're right, they're not willing to come out and say, you know, what they know or feel the other way. So I'm just, you know, am I surprised? I mean, kind of. You know, I was expecting because it kept growing. I mean, there kept being more and more. You kept adding to this. There kept being larger prizes, more attention, and they did their best to avoid you.
Right.
And even with the name, I mean, of course, you know, I hate to be bringing this up because, you know, who cares? But I mean, you know, being in a lineage of the family that started U-Haul. I mean, here is someone, a family in Arizona. This was a major corporation, one of the big giants, you know, certainly for decades here in Phoenix, Arizona. I remember you used to have big office complex down on Central and had, you know, blah, 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 you know, U-Haul, big Arizona corporation. And here you have one of the sons coming out saying, look, man, this is what I'm willing to do, want to say, make it go were. And normally they, at least what they didn't do, normally they would come out after someone for being a crackpot, you know, he's crazy, we got to commit him and all this kind of stuff, you know, but they didn't want to do that. You know, they're like, no, our best thing that we can deal with Michael is just do our best to ignore him. So you keep amping it up. So now, the reason we're doing this, we're going into the 8th anniversary, and I got a copy of a letter from you, we'll talk about in the next segment. We probably got a little time here. I got a copy of a letter, and it says, "Dear Mr. Boaz," which is the editorial page editor now.
Right.
Okay.
The Arizona Republic.
The Arizona Republic, the largest newspaper here in Arizona, the newspaper of Arizona Record, the newspaper that's so last century. You know, I mean, the lamestream media. These guys are going down too. I mean, you know, they had 20 editors, and now they're down to 15, and so it was you didn't have to write a $20,000 check. So you go $15,000, and you say, enclosed, please find Washington Mutual check number blah, blah, blah for $15,000 payable to yourself and other 14 members of the Arizona Republic Editorial Board. This check is yours if each of you do 4 things. 1, you view all the 3 DVDs. 2, You know, you go look at two websites. Three, you complete the affidavit, you know, the applicant affidavit saying that you did it. And you get a third-party signature of a witness saying that you signed this and it's you. So it's really all they got to do is watch the three DVDs and view two websites. That's it. And then say that they did.
Yeah, and just 10 minutes each for the website. So it's not a lot of time.
Yeah, no, this is $1,000. $1,000 for me to go do my job as an editor.
Over $200 an hour.
You pay them more than the Arizona Republic does.
It's over $200 an hour.
So this is, and the response, when was this sent? This is July 23rd.
Yeah.
Okay. So you send this to them, from Michael Schoen, Paradise Valley, Arizona, phone number, everything. They know who you are. You probably met most of these guys.
I met three or four of them.
I met most of them, and I'm not surprised they're not responding. But you look at the check. I got a copy of the check here. It has all their names on there. You print it in there. And, and Steve Benson. Yeah, he's the editorial cartoonist.
But he's on the editorial board.
Yeah. No, I would think that he would. I know Steve. I'm like, come on, Steve, don't be a wimp, Yeah. But he's, part of the man. $15,000 saying, here it is. All you got to do is you cash it, knock yourself out. And their response has been what?
Zero. There's no response. I mean, I sent each one of the 15 people a letter. I sent each one of them their personalized affidavits. I sent each one of them three DVDs. And they were hand-delivered, and I got a receipt for the hand delivery.
This is interesting. But how would it affect their career? I mean, they just cut 5 of 20. They're gone. Who's the first one of the next 15 to go? The first one that watches these DVDs, that's who. And they know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They don't want to play.
I don't agree totally. I think that.
Well, no, we'll talk about it in the next segment. We'll be right back here and declare your independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, and what's next for Michael Schoen? He will get his satisfaction.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Central Standard Time on the RBN Network, and from Freedoms, with an S, freedomsphoenix.com, studios in Phoenix, Arizona. I am your host, Ernest Hancock. In studio, Michael Schoen. Now, Michael Schoen has a very creative method of just trying to share a perspective, but get people to at least look at evidence. You have people that are so brainwashed and by the government version of what happened on 9/11 that it's like, look, take a look, tell us we're wrong, and I will pay you like $200 an hour to just look. Just look. Here's money. Just look. And I'm going, and you got to know from, and all of us have gone down these roads, have experienced this. We got just a few minutes here before we start the next hour, but I want you to get this in. There's a personal sacrifice for taking this kind of, truth sharing. A lot of times family members, mine, it were, we just got to, my kids are young and they know it's election season and there's envelopes of stuff, Oh, no, it's election season. We got to stuff envelopes. So we bribe them with movies and popcorn or whatever and sit around at family nights or, doing stuff. And then, of course, my wife's been very supportive. She's been, but, other family members are like, okay, whatever. As time goes on and things really start to unfold and happen the way we've been describing what was coming, all of a sudden then you're a hero, but as someone in your position, you have a very comfortable life that you could be leading, and you have family members, I'm sure they're going, can we just not worry about this stuff? Let's go over here and relax. Let's go work on our tan, in the Cayman Islands.
Right. Yeah, but I... Yeah, that's true, but part of my family has a different story. There's some of that, of the extended family has some of that attitude, but I can't really speak for other people. But a lot of my family, a part of my family knows this backwards and forwards better than most Americans do, because they were on the receiving end of profound injury from war. And I won't go into it, but they know it backwards and forwards. Matter of fact, I got one guy who's told me repeatedly, up against the wall by darkness, by sundown, in another language. So one of the reasons people don't support this is because they feel that there's going to be reprisals because they know they've been there before. But let me go on about me trying to get this word out. One thing I don't know if I told you, Ernie, was that I went to the Arizona State Bar Association early on when I went to them and I said, look, I'd like to buy a full page ad. And they said, fine, it's so much money, $5,000 or something in the Arizona Bar Monthly Journal. And I said, fine, I can pay it. And they said, fine, send us the text. So I sent him the text where I had this offer directed at all Arizona attorneys. I'd pay them $1,000. And the Arizona Bar left a message on my phone. No, we can't do this. We can't sell you this ad. So I called the guy back, and he was real nervous. He was a director of marketing and sales for the Arizona Bar Journal. And he said, well, no, we can't do this. You know, I've basically been instructed we can't do this.
By who?
Well, I didn't push him. He, you know, right then we're going to get into a cat fight. He was going to tell me, and so I was respectful to him. And I want to tell you another instance I had. Ernie told me, he said, well, I've got all these billboards around town, and here's the name and phone number of the girl that who is the agent that sold me the billboard space. And Ernie had all these political messages on there. And so I called the girl up. I said,
oh, we got to wait. Oh, that's a good one to hang on. You know, in the archive, you got to get, it's hour two. We sucked you in, the billboards. Because what we did is we had billboards all over the valley that it's not my debt. You know, these babies and so on going, hey, man, I didn't do this. You're in debt in me. You know, why am I going to pay for your stuff? And then he saw them, and Michael's going, "Woo, that's a good iron did. We're going to do that." So we'll talk about, we come back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock.